Welcome to a Friday morning. My name is Steak. It's the Steakhouse. The lamp on the moniker outside, that means we are open for business. Find your table. Get comfortable. We got the fastest 2 hours in radio ahead of us, and we got a bunch of folks helping us as well. G-Money back in the mix. How you doing, bud? We got to turn your mic on. This, I don't know why that happens 2 days in a row.
No, I'm ready to roll, man. Let's come have some fun.
Bo is here. Abe's helping us out. We got a bunch of guests. We got in-studio people. We got famous writers. We got one of the most acclaimed college baseball coaches of all time. I got a lot going on over the next 2 hours. So a challenge without the big three, Drew, Rusty, and Sandy, but we are focused and ready to rock and roll on a Mother's Day weekend where nowhere near, you know, we had this report and I had to be like, why do those guys always just talk about the weather first thing? I know Sandy, you know, she was a famous meteorologist, famous weather journalist. Anyways, it looks like it's going to be a nice day today. I'm actually golfing. So when I go on the golf course, it's not pretty. It's the ultimate humbling experience for me because, and not that I'm such a superior athlete, but I'm good enough at a lot of different sports.
Well, you're more of a tennis guy.
Tennis guy, pickleball, basketball, you know, every sport I'm decent enough, played lacrosse, of course, in high school and, you know, have pretty good hand-eye coordination, all that. That much being said, the reason I don't play more golf is how bad I am, and I've made a commitment to say enough already. Like, enough already, you're closer to the career than the beginning of your career, and at some point, you're going to want to be able to go out on a frequent basis, be better than respectable. So been doing a little bit of the golf academies and the lessons and all that, and today we're going out there with a little bit of a bad back, right? Already making excuses. Did you hear Sandy just rip into men the other day? Bo, you heard that shtick? Mike Johnson is literally telling you, an NFL lineman, a Alabama captain, NFL lineman who broke his ankle in the most horrific fashion, and he's like, this gout is the single worst pain I have ever had, and it's not close. And then she does some diatribe about how men whine, right? How did that sit with you, Bo? And I love Sandy to death, but maybe it's the you know, the men that she's been with or something. But
look, I can understand. So women like to pull the try having kids card, and I get that 100%.
Yes.
I'm not going to say that passing a gallstone or whatever is the same, but it's similar.
Yes.
But there are things that men go through in their lives that are very painful.
And that's one of them.
Like the common cold.
And also don't agree with the, but I don't agree with the whole when men get sick, they're babies.
Listen,
I'm
yeah.
not. You can never even tell when I'm sick.
I won't even take a day, ever.
Same.
So like Sandy's like, don't come to work if you're sick. I worked with her for 15, 20 years. I wanted to say to her, I come to work every single time. I was here 3 weeks ago. I literally couldn't move. I was lying down in the break. And not that I'm such a tough guy, but maybe you just need to marry more manly men or something. I don't know what that was about, right? And I hear from my family, like, you need to lay low. I say, no, being sick is not an option, ever. Anyways, Mike is doing better. I don't mean to take shots at Sandy, but she's not here, so I get to do that. And we got a lot going on over the course of the next couple of hours. We might as well just throw in our 9-9, because a lot of Braves to talk about and a lot to say about last night.
Here we go again. Through the left side! Ozzie's coming home! And the Braves win it in 11!
I told you.
The rookie Baldwin delivers a little Truist magic tonight for the Atlanta Braves.
Funky homestand for the Braves. They get 7-game set. Obviously, the Dodgers in a rain-filled weekend where you just get slapped around a little bit. You win the Sunday night game, and then you start to say, let's go to work on the Reds. Mm-hmm. Nice team.
Good team.
Nice little offense, right?
Yeah.
About equal to the Braves. You figure this could be a 4-game split. That's why yesterday was so important. You give up the huge 2-run homer in the ninth, and you're leaving town with a, what would it have been? A 3-4 homestand.
Yeah.
And once again, not as close to getting to 500, but in three games under, now you're one game under.
Yeah, and look, I mean, this has been a bugaboo for the Braves here early in the season, is getting back up to that 500 mark. It's one step forward, two steps back, but Brian Snicker pushed all the right buttons last night. There were a couple decisions on there that I felt like were a little interesting, you know, like bringing in Stuart Fairchild to pinch hit for Marcell Ozuna, and then inevitably Fairchild has to come up in the bottom of the 11th. It ends up working out in the Braves' favor.
Right.
It was a pinch running situation.
Pinch run. You said pinch hit.
But he came up to hit in the bottom of the 11th.
But that happened, yes, which is the danger of when you make that decision.
But the important thing is Spencer Schwellenbach got back on track. That's the number one thing.
Schwellenbach last night, 6 innings, 5 hits, a run, 2 walks, and 5 Ks. Raisel Iglesias, another disastrous scenario for him, getting real close to feeling like you can put him out there in the 9th inning.
Well, I'm not quite there yet, but this is a situation where he's just giving up the long ball. I mean,
Time and again.
Yeah, I mean, he's had about 11, 12 innings pitched this year. He's got 6 home runs. That's more than he gave up all of last year.
Yeah, 4 last year.
70 innings last year.
Was it the Cardinal game? They scored like 5 in the 9th, and you were up by like, you know, you almost blew that game.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the rookie, Drake Baldwin. A big moment, goes the other way with it. His manager's happy.
You know, I've been very impressed with his clock and how he's kind of lets the game come to him. I mean, he doesn't try and get out of his skin to do things, and that's kind of been something that I've been really impressed with him here. He doesn't get caught up in the moment because it's a big league game, and you know, he stays with his bat, the defense, everything. I've been just really impressed with how he goes about it and his clock. I mean, he helped us win the game, or he won the game for us.
What I would describe him as is just cerebral. I think that's the perfect adjective to describe Drake Baldwin. He steps up to the plate, doesn't matter what the situation is, and he just attacks each pitch. And he has got patience. He knows how to attack every single at-bat. Just a strong hitter.
Well, certainly, he's the guy we heard the most about in terms of impact. Sean Murphy, obviously, that's a nice combination the Braves have had. Mm-hmm. Reality now, guys, it's pretty simple. You're a game under 500. The Pittsburgh Pirates are absolutely flailing. 7 in a row they have lost. Really bad baseball team, one of the worst. And a chance now, if you go 2 out of 3 in Pittsburgh, you're back at 500.
Yeah, look, they just fired their manager, too. So you got Derek Shelton, who just got fired. Don Kelly, he's going to be stepping in. This is it's been a tough year for the Pittsburgh Pirates. Been a tough couple of years for the Pittsburgh Pirates. This was a year they thought they could make the playoffs, potentially.
Yeah, I mean, they have these little blips last couple of years where you said maybe they get in the mix. The reality of teams, you see this with the Orioles, they're really bad again. You see it with the Royals, you see it with the Pirates. Small market teams have a very, very small window in a 10-year stretch, maybe 2 years. Pirate fans have been absolutely dealing with this baseball team. It has been brutal for a long stretch. They come home and get the Nationals next week.
And we avoid Paul Skeens. That's the most important thing. That's really the biggest bugaboo that could have jumped up and bit us over the weekend.
Yeah, you get 2 out of 3, you're back at 500. Updating Spencer Strider. Listen, it's taken way longer than anybody would have anticipated. The frustration level on Spencer Strider is real, but for the most part, it looks like another session on Saturday. Obviously, he's not going to pitch in the home series against the Nationals. I'm just going to circle a date. Best case scenario. Talking to my friends, my brethren, my Braves brotherhood. You go up to Fenway Park next weekend, which would probably be the perfect weekend to be in Boston. It's not overrun as the summer. It's not summer there yet. Everybody's still in school. People aren't traveling. Go watch the Braves at Fenway. I think there is a decent chance that Spencer Strider could get a start over the weekend at Fenway Park, which would be spectacular.
Yeah, and look, this is just a guy we need to get back into the rotation. He's just got to stay healthy. Just to avoid that shtick of potentially being the injury bug type of thing, it just keeps jumping up and biting him. But hopefully, we just need this guy to get back to normal.
The depth of the pitching staff, if you get back Spencer Strider and you start to stretch things out with 5 or 6 guys, looks pretty good.
Yeah, you might have a 6-man rotation right now. Just based off of the way Grant Holmes is pitching, Spencer Schwellenbach, of course, he's cemented in there. And this is all before Ronaldo Lopez comes back at some point in July, August. It's a good problem to have for Brian Snicker.
All right, let's talk about the NBA last night. The T-Wolves over the Warriors. Finally, the normal common man that walks up to a Vegas or calls his guy or looks at a number and looks at a matchup and says, boy, that's a big number. They should cover the number. And that's exactly what happened last night. The T-Wolves, I think, were up 13-0. Warriors playing without Steph Curry for another 6 days at least. A complete blowout. Anthony Edwards and company, that series is 1-1, headed back to Golden State. But maybe the favorites are getting back on track. Oklahoma City did it the night before. Minnesota, a heavy favorite last night. Tonight, I should mention, really interesting. Cavs clearly still dealing with some banged up players. They are at Indiana. It will be a spectacular scene in Indiana. They're a 4-point favorite. After that, the Thunder at the Nuggets. The Thunder, a significant favorite in that one. So you have two powerhouse teams, the number one team in the West, the number one team in the East, both on the road tonight trying to right the ship.
Yeah, and look, this is a Cavs team that I'm actually really worried about. I'm not sure. Tyrese Halliburton and this playoff squad, they're just a playoff squad. You know, the Pacers.
That's fine.
It's about
injuries. Cleveland had the greatest regular season. They're deep as hell. Mobley, Garland, Dondre. That's a lot to overcome.
Yeah, but what does it mean? What does it mean if you don't do anything in the playoffs? And Tyrese Halliburton and company, they've shown that they can get it done in the postseason. They jump on teams. And you say defense wins in the playoffs, but so far the offense is just way too much to overcome.
Well, their injuries to me are what's been too much to overcome. When you talk about Mobley and Garland, those are absolute key pieces. Donovan Mitchell goes for 41 the other night in a losing effort. I like both favorites tonight for sure. Tomorrow, Boston and the Knicks, that series.
Are you worried about Boston?
Well, of course you're worried about Boston. I mean, it's a fascinating series. Knicks fans are literally losing their minds. Think Saints fans with Drew Brees when they made a Super Bowl run. That's what's going on in New York. They cannot believe that the Knicks are up 2-0. That'll be one of the toughest tickets tomorrow afternoon in Madison Square Garden. And then later in the day, of course, the Minnesota series. So Golden State has no time to turn around. They're playing right away, and they'll have to deal without Steph Curry. That's in the news. Also, NFL schedule a few days away from that. Wednesday, May 14th is when that's coming up. And Danny Hall will join us in the 10 o'clock hour. He is wrapping up 40 years as the head baseball coach at Georgia Tech. His final home series of his career. He's been a friend for many years. He's a legend. He's an amazing guy. We'll say hey to him. We'll say hey to Bob Ryan, legendary sports writer. We'll talk some pickleball at 10 o'clock with my buddy who's running one of the biggest pickleball organizations in the world. Huge tournament coming to Atlanta. So a lot on the table. And, yeah, we might hear from my mom as well for Mother's Day weekend. It's Steak on the Steakhouse on Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. My name is Steak. It's the Steakhouse. 2 hours of a little bit of sports talk and everything else that comes along with it. And I talked yesterday and was waxing poetic about, you know, a family. I grew up with mom and dad that weren't into sports at all. And how does that happen that you become obsessed with it? Well, you grow up in a town where you're obsessed with it. You also grow up in a town where your folks that you read every day are named Bob Ryan, Will McDonough, Peter Gammons, among others. And helped me become, I think, hopefully build a career that I've been able to have for the last 30 years in Atlanta. Bob Ryan joining us, one of the great sports writers of all time. Good morning, Bob. Thanks for being on with us.
Hey, you're welcome. Thanks for the compliment.
Absolutely, sir. Lots to ask you about in your illustrious career. Let me ask you, though, kind of a basic question about life and times of a beat writer. Was it the Celtics always the only team that you were on the beat with from, you know, start to finish? You didn't do multiple teams, multiple sports, correct?
I became the Celtics beat man as a complete shock in 1969 when I was 23 years old. I had been a summer intern in 68 at the Globe, and then when the summer expired, I had enlisted in the Army Reserves, and I did my basic training and AIT at Fort Knox. Came back in February 69, was rehired as a office boy with a verbal promise of getting on the next opening on the staff. That came in October of 69 on a Wednesday when the sports editor informed me I was going to be on the staff. And, oh, by the way, you're covering the Celtics opener on Friday night. I had not been to an exhibition. I had met nobody. I had never covered an NBA game specifically. And that was my baptism. And that launched my NBA writing career. And it is the only team that beat in basketball that I ever had.
Not bad to start your career covering Bill Russell, and I assume that was that the title?
No, it wasn't. No, this is the
year after.
Russell year.
That was the year after. They just beat the Lakers, and this is no more Bill Russell, so a different era. But let me ask you, the glamorous life, and I say it tongue-in-cheek, of a beat writer in the 70s, in the 80s, what does the day look like? It's so different now in a digital age. Beat writers sometimes don't even travel, or beat reporters aren't even necessarily on the road all the time. What are those years like when your life is spent? What's the difference in access, conversation, connection with players and everybody else?
I obviously do not know what it's like to exist today. I can't conceive of it knowing what I know. You can only be happy doing it now the way they do it if you are blissfully ignorant or unaware of what life was like in our time when it was so much better, so much infinitely better in every way. I do not envy these people at all. They will never enjoy the job the way we did. They do not have access. They were treated with like pieces of naval lint. They sit. They do not sit on the floor and hear the game and see it the way we did. They do not have access to open practices routinely the way we did. They did not go out and socialize with the players the way we did. They did not have. They just don't. And they're not even writing the game the way we did. They write observations. They don't write beginning, middle, and game stories with beginning, middle, and end.
But there always is a nuance. And I don't mean to cut you up, but there's so much to ask you about. We only have a limited amount of time.
Yeah.
There's always a nuance. And I know how close you were with the 80s Celtics, and you wrote multiple books with Larry Bird, but then the 70s and you know, of how much you see, like you're out with the players. You're around them. You have, you know, there is not the paranoia, or at least there isn't the standoffishness. For any young writer, that nuance was much more prevalent of being able to live with these guys and make sure you didn't screw it up.
That's true. You have to earn their trust, and you earn their trust by demonstrating over time, you know, what's reportable and what's not reportable, and you have to earn it. And I say, and I talk to any group now, I never thought about this in these terms, Stake, until about 3 years ago. You're a salesperson, and what you're doing as a beat person, whether it's college or pro, if it's pro, you're selling yourself, yourself, to the players, the coaches, and the management. If you're in college, you're selling yourself to the players, the coach, and the AD. And that's it. You have to earn the trust and respect by how you carry yourself, not only what you write and broadcast, but how you carry yourself. And it's really no more complicated than that. But the whole circumstance was so radically different. I can't even begin to, just the routine stuff that we did, gathering at the airport before the game before the flight and shooting the breeze and spending just everything, riding the bus with them to shoot around in the morning and back, and then riding the bus to the arena on the road. And I remember one night in Cleveland when they held the bus up, so my my rival, but we were friendly, Steve Bulpet of the Herald, could finish his story and get on the bus to get back. I mean, imagine that today.
Crazy.
That's science fiction.
Yeah.
Players wouldn't believe it.
When you hear about Bob Ryan is with us, ESPN, the Boston Globe, among other places, one of the great writers in history in sports. When you hear, and I'm not trying to be the old guy on the lawn because I'm not that guy, but when you hear about players talk about load management and what they're subjected to, and you know how they're treated by owners, you literally are flying commercial jets with fans and 7-foot tall players sitting in coach and waiting 2.5 hours in a delay with Billy from Dorchester and Jimmy from Falmouth. And that was part of it, along with buses and everything else in terms of travel. And not playing 82 games would be sinful as well on top of it.
You wouldn't think of not playing if you could play, period. And you go back and look in the record books and see the number of the routine nature of 82 game guys and 80 game guys, on and on, all the great ones who were lucky enough not to get injured.
You're travel.
So right.
What about the travel?
The travel conditions are so radically easy, much better now. Charter flights everywhere. 5-star hotels everywhere. I'm telling you that when I started, one team chartered occasionally, the Knicks. They had the most money. And then there was a radical thing in the 80s. The Pistons started the charter, and they were winning stuff. And then now everybody charters routinely. That wasn't that way at all. You had the early morning flight, 7 o'clock, 8 in the lobby, and you're going to the – oh, and it's not even – you hit upon it. It's so different. And the idea – why all these guys are getting hurt, well, that's number one, and that's like a baseball. Why are pitchers all hurt? But Pop started this with the big joke, and I love Pop, and they're going to miss him. But he started this with the big joke. Remember stat sheet for Duncan, did not play. What did he put? Something funny.
Yeah.
He's the pioneer of this. The load management, and now everybody's doing it.
Bob Ryan with us on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Obviously a major freak out last 2 days in Boston. I can only imagine what Sports Talk Radio and the writers have been like. Mm. But when you have a city where the level of urgency and the culture permeates sports at every level, does it create greater players, create more urgency? I can only imagine, obviously, last 48 hours, but you've seen this for 40 years, mm-hmm. particularly in the last 25 years. You got to be thick-skinned, and you got to want to be the guy if you're going to be able to handle what's going on the last few days.
That's right, and that's why the most important person right now is the best player on the team, and he's fully cognizant of his responsibility, and that's Jason Tatum. And yeah. You're absolutely right, and whether it's baseball, football, basketball, but mostly in baseball and basketball, because even hockey, but no question. This town has gotten so accustomed to championships and winning. We're the luckiest municipality in America. We're the one of two that has won each of the four major sports, and they did it within a 1 7-year span from 04 to 11. We won at least once in each sport. On and on it goes. We've had the most parades since the 21st century. There's inherent pressure there that you don't have in the average city. There is no question about that. This is not an easy place to play. New York and Boston are very, very different than playing in the heartland and or other places.
You hate the three-point shot. You still do, and maybe this is a testament to that, what's happened in this series?
Without question. I what I'm about to say, Stake, is not hyperbole. It's something I've been saying for many years. The three-point shot is the worst thing to happen to basketball in my lifetime. And it has distorted the game at every level. And it's very interesting. People don't realize, what is the three-point shot? Why is it? It is the gimmick of a promoter. Abe Saperstein, yes, the impresario of the Globetrotters, he founded a league in 1961 called the American Basketball League. It was going to be in competition with the NBA, and he needed a gimmick, and he came up. There had been idea of a three, I know, had been floating around casually for many years, but no one was taking it seriously. He put it in, and the league folded after a year in the second year. But it was picked up by the Eastern Basketball League, which was then the primary minor league and the second-best basketball league in the world, then picked up in 1976 by the ABA, because they needed a gimmick, and they had two, that and the red, white, and blue ball. And that's its origin. No one was asking for it. No one needed it. And we still don't need it, but now it's the currency. It's distorted the game at every level. And, we all know the most influential player of the 21st century is Steph Curry, who's influenced every little kid in America. Every 8-year-old wants to shoot threes. And that's a fact.
Yeah.
So, but we see what's happening. You live by it, you die by it. The Celtics won by it last year. They may yet win by it, let me give an example of the capriciousness of it. The Timberwolves, they were 5 for 29 in game one. They lost. Last night they shot over 40% and they won. And it may or may not be as simple as that. But I hate it. It isn't needed. And now we have no more legitimate post play. The Kevin McHales of the world are like dinosaurs. They'll never be seen again. And it's just not necessary. But here it is, and it's not going away. I know that. We'll have a 4-point shot before I die. I'm sure of that.
All right. Before we go, finish up with Bob Ryan. By the way, you want a great sports book. Scribe, My Life in Sports, The History of Bob Ryan on the Road, covering some of the great teams, players, athletes. Somebody out there wants to know what Bob Ryan considers a great writer, a current great group of writers in sports that you read or otherwise, and then mentors and folks that you emulated or continued to emulate as you were a writer. Give me four
or five. I'll start with that. My two beacons. I won't say idols, or you can say that. Jim Murray, the great late Jim Murray of the Los Angeles Times, got my attention in my teens. He was a syndicated columnist then, when they had such a thing, and I saw him in the Philadelphia Inquirer. I became infatuated with Jim Murray. Secondly, Frank DeFord, Sports Illustrated. Had you asked me at age 20, what do you want to do? I would have said, I want to be the next Frank DeFord. I want to go to Sports Illustrated and be the next Frank DeFord. Those are the two most influential people in my writing career. Okay, number one. Contemporarily, I think The Athletic is terrific. They've hired some of the great people, and they've hired them. What they're doing on a daily basis is very, very good. I think that we still have a very good sports section at the Globe. I think an exemplary sports section left is the New York Post. I think they really touch all the bases as well as any paper still does. And in all deference to friends of mine and everybody else, the columnist that I think most gets it totally in every aspect is Mike Vaccaro of the New York Post. He gets it. He knows. He has a fan point of view and brings that to with vast historical knowledge and great local knowledge. I mean, if you live in greater New York and you don't read Vaccaro, you're missing something.
Before we go, 10 seconds. Two writers, nothing to do with sports. Two of the great writers in history that you respect.
Oh, well, no, John Updike's my ultimate idol. John Updike, no question. And I'll just leave it at that. He's my man.
Thank you so much. Always a thrill for me to be able to talk to Bob Ryan. Thanks for coming on in Atlanta.
Thanks for having me.
All right, there he is, Bob Ryan, telling you what it was like and telling you what it's like today. And great respect for the Post and Vaccaro. I got to make sure I read him every day. When we come back, the NFL schedule? Why it's a real big deal for Falcon fans. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Hey, it's Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Thanks so much for being with us, and thanks to Bob Ryan for joining us. And there's nothing I hate more than, and I just so I hope the listener understands too, than cutting off a guy like Bob Ryan when he has a lot to say and a lot of answers. I love live radio, and I love being able to come on here and react about last night right after it happened. And the excitement and energy that you don't get in a podcast where you air it 3 days later or, you know, you're not interacting with calls or any of that. But the beauty of the podcast is when you have someone like Bob Ryan, who literally I could talk to for 2.5 hours, is that you just have to at sometimes say, hey, let's try to get two or three more questions. And he was great at the end there. And maybe because he does Around the Horn and he actually understands TV as well. But, you know, to me, that's a thrill to be able to talk to. It's really not about Boston. It's about any writer that has worked for 45 years in sports that has traveled to every arena, the 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, seen every era of sports, and does not come off shaking his finger at, you know, the modern era of things. So that's why it's always a thrill to get him on.
I mean, besides his thought on the 3-point shot, Stick. I mean, I get the 3-point shot. I mean, it's kind of a tough spot for the old heads, I guess, but it has revolutionized the game. It's completely changed everything.
Well, yeah, it's definitely revolutionized the game. And I don't totally agree with what he says, because shooting is what basketball is supposed to be about. But he is right. It has changed everything. The notion of running an offense through a low post guy and getting buckets and understanding McHale was his example, or regardless, I mean, it has taken away the notion of throwing it to a guy down on the block and letting him be the most important, or letting post play really be a factor, because 2 points are not as much as three. And we all, you know, it's, you know, we joke about the simplicity of that. But listen, all the math in the world and algorithms and analysis has been done. They're not throwing it down on the block to Karl Malone backing a guy down and hitting a fallaway jumper, even, you know, even 10% of the offense is that, and maybe it used to be 70. And the reason it's not is because it's just the math doesn't add up. I mean, the math doesn't add up. 3-point shots are just too powerful. They're too influential in terms of making plays, and that's why you don't see that kind of thing happening anymore. So I understand the McHales and Malones and Charles Barkley to a degree, right? Charles Barkley's not shooting threes. Now, he would have had to. Any guy in that era would have had to take their game outside and have that be more a part of it.
It's a completely different game than what people played in the 90s. And that's why I hate these comparisons that I see people make about players from the 80s, 70s, 80s, 90s. What would they do in this league? Oh, well, they do X, Y, and Z. Or we don't know. We don't have any idea. They play a completely different brand of basketball. And I mean, he said it, and I completely agree. And I'd actually take it a step further about Steph Curry. I'd say Steph Curry is the most influential basketball player that we've ever seen. Because every kid in America can try to step up to the three-point line and take a shot. Not everybody can do what Jordan did. Not everybody can do what Wilt did and all those incredible things underneath around the basket. But Steph has changed the game.
Yeah,
he's
changed the game, but he didn't change it more than Michael Jordan. I mean, Mike, you talk about every kid on planet Earth wanted to be Michael Jordan.
Well, there's a difference between that and being an influence. They're right there, the same types of players.
Yeah, I mean, to say that, I mean, he changed the way we play the game, I would agree with you.
Yeah.
Michael Jordan made basketball an international sport of which, you know, you're the biggest star on planet Earth for a long time and continue to be that, right? And Michael's game was, you know, okay from three, but certainly not a part of his game. Listen, Larry Bird would have shot, you know, 10 threes a night in this era. Like 10, 50, you know. Was he as good a shooter as Steph Curry? Not as good, but not far. Even Reggie Miller didn't shoot nearly as many threes. Yeah. That wasn't part of it. You had Rick Smits in the post. You had Dale Davis in the post. You had Antonio Davis in the post. You run stuff through your big guys. Mm-hmm. You run through stuff through your off guards. Now they just be like, Reggie needs to shoot 14 threes a night because those are worth more than going on the block to Rick Smits, backing a guy down and shooting a jump hook shot. It was just different. Now it's like run everything through the outside. Steph Curry running off of screens. That's what Reggie Miller would be doing. He'd just be getting a lot more shots at the time.
Yeah, you have to guard 30, 35 feet off of the rim. You're asking defenders to do is insane.
You don't know this Pacer team. It was Dale Davis. I think it was Antonio Davis and Rick Smits. Like, those guys were monster big guys. And, you know, you would run stuff through them, even with Reggie Miller. All right, it's 9:47 on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Mike Conti came to me. I listened to the, what's the official title? Brand manager. Brand manager! He said it's Mother's Day. Can we do some Mother's Day programming? You've heard me talk about my mom all the time on the show. And we said, I made the huge mistake yesterday, Bo, of announcing I wanted her to do buy or sell. And she listens every single day in the Odyssey app, listens every day. So I got the call yesterday, Mom, right? And you were, I wouldn't say you were in a panic, but you were not, you like to be prepared, but I would argue you don't want to be knowing that that's going to happen because you probably thought about it too much. Is that accurate?
Correct. Correct.
Yeah, you called me, you said, what are you talking about? Am I coming on tomorrow? And I realized.
I'm not used to it the way you are, and I panic. I don't like to use the wrong word, make a mistake.
Yeah.
All that.
Take a deep breath. Are you in the middle of your morning walk, or that just ended?
I am, dear. I am. Yeah. And I...
Tell everybody what your routine is. You're 85 years old, correct?
I'd like to correct you on that
86
one. I'm 86.
86.
Yes.
And what's the fitness? What's the routine every day? And how long have you been in this routine? Tell our listeners because it's pretty remarkable.
Okay, I started in 1973 running. but then I had some difficulties with surgeries and all that, and I went into power walking, which I do now ever since then, to today, 5 miles a day. Like, that's my routine.
Like literally 5 miles a day.
Yeah, like literally.
So like if,
even when I'm in Atlanta, yes,
even
up it, those hills.
Even in, everyone's like, I saw your mom in the neighborhood. So you'll do the 3 miles in the morning, and then
yes,
we'll be sitting around
2 miles.
We'll be sitting around the pool. We'll be hanging out at the house. We'll be taking a ride. He's like, next thing you know, you're gone because you need. Is that just an obsessive compulsive? You need to get your next 2.5 miles later in the
day? Yes, yes, it's my nature. I can't do without it.
Yeah,
it stabilizes me mentally and physically.
And if you have to be my mom, being stabilized mentally probably was something that you needed over the years.
Well, I'll leave it up to you to decide that.
Yes.
But it's been an absolute greatest delight of my life to have you as my son.
Well, that's very...
So,
We ready to play Buy or Sell? I don't think you've ever done that.
Yes.
All right.
No, I've never done it.
All right. This is Buy or Sell with Valya Shapiro. Buy or Sell. Of the three weddings, now you have two sons and three weddings. Somebody got married twice. Not naming names.
Yes.
Of the three weddings for your sons, the one in New Orleans was your favorite. Buy or sell?
I'll buy that. I'll buy that. Absolutely. I mean, you know, going down the French Quarter with the whole band and
second line.
Your,
that was the second line. Yeah.
Sorry, the second line. Okay.
So it's not necessarily the woman. That was at, not that you don't love Kimberly, but the best wedding was New Orleans. Is that safe to say?
Yes. Yes. I love that city.
Sandra, well, you get 4 more years with Nola headed there. Sandra is your favorite co-host of the three. Sandra is your favorite by herself.
Yes, because number one, she's a female. Number two, because she has a sense of humor. And number three, because she has a repartee with you that is really unique in the radio world.
Well said. Buy or sell, you speak fluently more than 6 languages. Buy or sell, you speak...
Yeah. Yes, I do. What? I do. I'm buying that one.
How many languages do you speak? Give us the rundown.
7, fairly fluently, almost fluently.
Right. So name them. What are the languages?
Okay, the languages are English, Turkish, French, Italian, German, Spanish, Greek.
Yeah, and if you listen to sports radio, we barely speak English, so you're well ahead of the game.
I wouldn't say that. I am in great admiration of your skill in using the English language almost to perfection.
Thank you.
Okay, you can go on.
Your favorite singer when I was a kid was Barbara Streisand. Buy or sell? Babs was your favorite.
Yes, Barb was my favorite. I listened to her all the time, and I still think she has an absolutely beautiful voice.
Buy or sell? Steven and his friends scared you during their wild stage in high school. You called that family. You called that meeting of the parents. Absolutely humiliated me. Buy or sell, we scared you during our wild stage. Buy or sell.
I'll buy that one because you did scare me. I was petrified. Going to a kid's home when his parents were away and doing things that were way beyond my imagination, no, that didn't sit well with me.
Buy or sell, you have a favorite grandchild. You have 5 of them. Buy or sell, you have a favorite. You don't have to tell us.
Oh, I don't do that. I do not do that. I will sell that one I adore them each individually.
So you couldn't rank them 1 through 5 or how much, you know, each one?
No, I will not do that. I will not do that.
Buy or sell, a 3-hour opera can actually be kind of boring. A 3-hour opera is kind of boring. Buy or sell.
I do not agree with you. No, I will buy that one because I have seen it, I have experienced it, and it is beautiful. Plus the fact that I was brought up with a lot of classical music when I was growing up.
Buy or sell, you regret sending Steven to a shrink as a little kid. Buy or sell, you regret it looking back. Buy or sell.
Well, I regret the fact that you had to be made to do it when, as you explained to me years later, you really weren't the one who needed it.
Who's the one who needed it? Say who needed it.
Your brother, Bram.
All right. There you go. It's out in the open. It's on radio. Buy or sell.
Oh my God.
Buy or sell, you can drink two martinis and still be okay. Buy or sell.
As far as I'm concerned, yes, I'll buy it. As far as you're concerned, no.
Well, listen, as far as Bram's concerned, you can't even have one, right?
That's correct.
Buy or sell, you'd consider dating again if the right guy came along. Buy or sell.
No, darling. Never, never, never. I had one absolutely immeasurable man as a husband, and nothing would ever come close to that.
50 years.
And I would never even consider it. That's your daddy.
Buy or sell, you listen to every show on the Odyssey app. Buy or sell.
Yes, I do. I listen to Odyssey. And I have to confess that I listen to you and sometimes listen to some of the people who come after you or come before you. And that's been a pleasure.
And you're a Mike Bell fan, correct?
I sure am. Yes. He's adorable.
He does the best vice spare. All right, we're running up against the break. I think you did a great job. We give kudos, buy or sell. We may have you do
Thank
this.
You.
We may have you do this again. What are you doing for? Well, I'll see you. What, you're coming in Wednesday for the graduation and everything, right, Mom?
Yes, I am. I'm looking very much forward to it. Thank you, Stephen.
We'll celebrate Mother's Day when you're here.
Thank you, darling.
All right.
Thank you.
Love you. Talk soon. And there she is. Good job by Mrs. Shapiro. Good format for her, too.
That was fun.
Yeah.
That was fun.
She's a unique lady, for sure. Nobody luckier than me. Hey, when we come back, let's talk some pickleball from a guy who knows more about it than anybody in the world, practically. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.